following is a previously broadcast program.
Welcome to Dragon Root Radio, Feminist Waves brought to you by CKUT and the Center for Gender Advocacy.
The Dragon Root Media Collective aims to bring you feminist content that challenges interlocking systems of oppression and makes space for voices systemically silenced. Dragon Root understands media as being inherently political and emphasizes media skill sharing as a form of resistance.
We meet every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Center for Gender Advocacy and welcome anyone interested in learning or producing feminist media to join. No skills required.
Welcome to Dragon Root Radio. On today's show, we had the chance to speak with artist Ona Liu about her upcoming album, as well as what it's like to be one of the 2.1% of women music producers in the industry. Here is our interview with Ona Liu.
I am Ona Liu. I am from Argentina. I moved to Canada, to Winnipeg in 2016. I'm a singer and songwriter, and I focused mostly in fusion of Latin American traditional genres. I try to bring them to a contemporary songwriter kind of sound. I love the idea of keeping these traditional musics alive. And also I like writing about things that I care about. I like, kind of my aim is to write songs that move the listener. I want the song to give the space to the listener to feel whatever they need to feel at that moment. I think music has that amazing role in our lives.
Yeah, definitely. So you have a new album coming out in May 27. Can you tell us a bit about this album, the process making it, and maybe the intention behind it?
Well, it's a very special work for me because there was a space of 5 years between I released my first album and this album. And in those five years, like everything happened in my life, from going through a very hard time because of the sickness of a sibling, to moving to Canada to build my life from zero, to becoming a mom and going through a very hard first year with that. And so there were many songs in that period, and all of them mean a lot in the sense that they have this very important, they reflect these very important things that happened in my life and the lessons behind it. And it's also beautiful because it's the first album I'm doing since I moved to Canada, and I received the support of Canada Council for the Arts and all these things. And so I did it with a lot of great production value. So it's like many dreams come true, putting this album out. And yes, the aim behind it is always, as I said before, I would love the songs to help people feel and move and do whatever catharsis they need to do and just not feel alone. You know, when we listen in a song that someone has gone through something or feels something similar to us, in an instant, loneliness dissipates. So I like that idea.
It's very well said. And so you mentioned over the last kind of 5 years since your last album, there's been so many things that have happened, including the pandemic, which...
Yes, I didn't got to mention that. That too.
What would you say were kind of some of the themes that emerged for this album? Mm-hmm. If there's any common themes that... or
Totally. There are main things that are, I think, the distilled lessons of these 5 years. So the album is called Diamante, which means diamond. And that's one of the songs from the album. And the message behind that song, I took this element of the diamond because diamonds are created, you know, down there in the earth, at the highest pressure and the highest temperature, and then they become these fluids become this rock, which is one of, I think, the hardest material known to man, and also this such a valuable rock. And I think that hardships and the challenges, the biggest challenges we go through, kind of have that effect. If we get to survive and to overcome them, we are transformed. And in that song in particular, it moves me a lot to sing it. I kind of talk about the perspective of the challenges and conditioning women specifically go through life. And then in the chorus and pre-chorus, I kind of try to make it more universal to be an anthem for anyone who is being oppressed, because that's really not something unique to women. But I feel like I could write this song mostly after I became a mother. That gave me a deepened perspective and a deeper empathy on what my mom has gone through in her life, and my grandmother, and women all over the world. And I know I live in a pretty good situation. There are women who have it so much worse, and even so, I struggled a lot with these things, and so I felt like I needed to say something. I think as I continue to grow, I become older. Also, I feel like we need to talk. We need to say things. The ones that can have a voice and have a public voice, we have to use it, because so many people can't. They don't even have the chance. So it's kind of a right and an obligation to put that out there. And my hope, as always, I'm going to say for the third time, but is if someone who is going through a situation like this and really being oppressed or dismissed by who they are and they can't be in freedom, to remind them of their own strength. It's very easy to feel weak when you are being in a situation of violence or psychological or physical violence. So this song is kind of, no, you are strong and you can change your situation.
And this song, Diamante, it was released on International Women's Day this year, is that right?
Yes.
So we're going to play that song.
Serás callado, maleducada. Serás sumisa o una paria. Serás madre, esposa, amorosa, o no serás nada. La máquina te gasta de a poco, es como una venda en los ojos. Va apagándose tu luz, va creciendo el enojo. Alza la mirada, es tu tiempo ahora. Sos una roca, tu fuerza desborda. Quien sea que te esté pisando, surgí de abajo y libérate. Sabrán que con sus pies pesados te hiciste diamante. Diamante, diamante. Tomaste su peso viejo, te hiciste diamante. Diamante, diamante. Tomaste ese peso viejo, te hiciste. Van abriéndose caminos, que sepan que hasta acá llegamos, no es todo lo mismo. Confíate de tu grito interno, no sos de vivir desde el miedo. Tu voluntad no está quebrada, no es tuyo el desierto. Alza la mirada, es tu tiempo ahora. Sos una roca, tu fuerza de joven. Con sus pies pesados te hiciste diamante. ya no quiero estar callada, si hay tantas que lloran. Alza la mirada, tu tiempo ahora, sos una roca, tu fuerza desborda. Quien sea que te esté pisando, surge de abajo y libérate, sabrás que con sus pies pesados te hiciste diamante.
Diamante, that was released on International Women's Day this year. You mentioned just before the song that you kind of hear or experience this song differently as you've journeyed into motherhood. And I'm wondering, as a musician, as an artist, how motherhood has influenced either how you experience your own songs or your process.
Yes, totally, because it has changed me. But all in a good way. I like, honestly, maybe it sounds silly what I'm gonna say, but after going through that and childbirth and the first year and even now, but I've just gained a lot of respect for myself and for how strong and what and the things I can do and the things I can endure, and that has given me a renewed passion and will to make music, to say what I have to say, and also I think it has opened my heart. You know, when you have a child, it's like a new level that we didn't know before of love, and I think that widens, that can widen, and it has widened my sensitivity too.
I want to talk about music production. I know you're also a music producer, is that right? So yes. So in today's industry, only about 2.1% of music producers are women, and you're in this group. So can you tell us a bit about your opinion or your experience about the lack of gender diversity in certain aspects of the music industry? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think like so many in so many occupations, it's shifting slowly only now, and it's crazy to hear that only 2.1% of producers are women. That I don't know. It's of course it's a male dominated industry, like most industries. I don't know what industry would be female dominated today. But I think that the doors are opening. It's a great time to be a. I feel like 10 years ago and 20 years ago, women wouldn't even consider being a producer. And today we can. It's much more reachable. There are women doing it. The degrees and the colleges are there. So it's a great. It's the best moment there have been to be a producer. But of course, you have to toughen up, like in any industry, and I think it's very important to not waste your energy and really choose the right people to work with, because it's a great industry, and there are very people who still are in the old ways, and you don't want to work with them, but just work with the people who are cool and they are building the new industry, and they are out there, but there's a lot of work to be done, like as in festivals and everything, everywhere it's like most male. So there's a lot of work to do, and every new woman that joins the industry is very important to create. I'm curious about how it's going to be, I don't know, in how many years when maybe 50% of women are producers. I think music is going to be different.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, and also on that point, I think you know, there's obviously a lot of there's some gender diversity in artists and the performers, but a lot of the behind the scenes tends to also be very male dominated. I'm wondering, as a female musician yourself, either thinking back to when you started recording your first albums, what kind of impact do you think that would have had if there were more women behind the scenes in that sense?
Great. I think it would have been great. Of course, I worked with men that were very supportive and were very nice, and we had very good energy. But again, as I continued to grow, I started putting more value in how different experiences to have women around. And it is different. I don't know. Just the energy. I think even the more, or the men who think are more progressive and more open, like there is still like things that they don't see about how we interact and how they treat women. So I think it would probably have helped me to evolve and be more confident faster. Actually, I'm working on the project for my third album now, and I specifically said, okay, no, let's change the ratio here. I want to work with women, so there's going to be many women involved.
Well, I wanna go back to your music and your musical influence. So, I know that you studied classical composition as well as contemporary writing. How has that combo influenced your music? Because they're kind of like opposite ends.
Yes, it's very much opposite ends. The classical degree was like huge and so long and hard. But it gave me it formed my musical ear a lot, and I it opened my brain to classical music. And then I went on to focus on contemporary in Boston at Berkeley. But now today I think the clear result of that is when you listen to my first album, and then if you go on and listen to this one, like every song is a micro universe. I usually work with my husband, who is also a producer, and we are not afraid. He also had both classical and contemporary influences, and we just explore and we give each song what it needs, and we draw from classical and we draw from contemporary. And it creates a very diverse palette of musical flavors within the album. Songs are very different one from the other. Like, I guess the connecting thing is like the way I write and the way I sing, the messages of the songs, the melodies, you know, that it's Latin American folk rhythms, but the arrangements are very different from one another.
I love that every song is its own little universe. It's really a beautiful kind of analogy. As we mentioned at the top of the interview, the new album is coming out. Can you tell us a bit about what you're hoping people take away from listening to this album and
I also wanted to go back to this because you asked me about the themes in the album, and what I hope they take away is whatever they need. But yeah, like feeling empowered, encouraged. Like another of the themes within that goes through the songs of the album is the importance of relationships and those people in our lives who are always there, you know, when everything is good. But when also and mostly when things go very wrong and very bad, and they need to be uncomfortable to be with you, you know, and it's hard to be with you, but they are still there. That's another thing that I to value a lot in the last 5 years, and it's on several of the songs. I also another of the things that I like that's in the album is this thing of there is room for everything in our hearts. Like, I think I grew up and I suffered a lot because I had this conception in my mind that happiness meant the absence of problems or the absence of anguish or the absence of sadness. So, hence, if I felt sad or whatever, then I'm not happy. And that messed me up a lot. And I think life is lightness, light and darkness, and we can feel sad and at the same time be profoundly happy, and we can be angry but also feel peace. I don't know if it makes any sense, but I've tried to embrace everything and not repress any part of my existence, and that has helped me a lot. I am more peaceful now than I was a few years ago, and that's a big part of it. So those are some takeaways I would like, and I would like to also say, oh, I love this artist. I'm going to listen to her forever.
Yes, of course. Download the whole album.
Yeah, exactly.
So for people who, before I ask for the links and stuff, do you have any plans? I know we're still in different areas, well, everywhere, still in the midst of the pandemic, but do you have any plans for touring or performing or... Yes.
Not any confirmed plans yet, but I am trying to go to Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, and Vancouver within Canada. And I'm also going to be going to Argentina next month.
Ooh.
So, yeah, those places I would like to happen this year. I'm working on it. I hope I can make it happen.
Yes, definitely. I'll keep my fingers crossed, especially for that Montreal one.
Yay! I'm dying to go to Montreal.
For our listeners who want to find your music, support you, where can they go online?
Spotify and all the streaming platforms. There is my website where they can purchase music as well and listen and have like all the links and videos and everything in one place. But I'm also on YouTube with all the music videos and Instagram. Very active on Instagram. I do live shows every week. Yep.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much again for
Serás callada o maleducada, serás sumisa o una paria, serás madre, esposa, amorosa o no serás nada. La máquina te gasta de a poco, es como una venda en los ojos, va apagándose tu luz, va creciendo el enojo.
Had the chance to speak with Wynn Wolf. Wynn Wolf is a Montreal artist who made her debut recently with a song and video called Boys on Magazines. We had the chance to chat with Wynn Wolf about this debut song, the making of the video, and the meaning behind it.
You're so
I'm an independent artist from Montreal, and I just put out my first single, and it's going really well. I'm really happy with it.
Girls, they call you trouble. Friends will call you God.
Speaking of your first single, so this is your kind of music debut with Boys on Magazines. Can you tell me a bit or ask a little bit about the song itself?
So this is a song that is really for the person I was when I wrote it, which was in like my last year of high school. And it was a time where I think I felt really conflicted because I was, you know, like, and I still am like a diehard feminist and really trying to prioritize female friendships and the environment and just things I cared about. But at the same time, I felt like my brain was just filled with anxiety and insecurities about male approval. And it was really tough because it's something that I think, especially now, we're not really talking about in music anymore, is feeling really powerless. At least in my circles with like teenage girls or young girls, now I'm 20. And girls who, you know, the image that is really popular to portray is one of a really powerful person. And of course, I want to present as powerful, but I wanted to also talk about something that is just feeling really shitty. Can I say that?
Yeah.
Feeling really shitty about, or being made to feel really shitty by, like, boys. Mm-hmm. So that's what the song's about. And that's why I chose it as the first single, because it's kind of how I wanted to start whatever journey this is, because now I do feel like, although it's a up and down thing with self-confidence, I do feel like that's very much in the past. But I definitely wanted to put this out because I feel like at that age, I would have loved this song.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's such a theme, especially for young women, the male approval thing that definitely doesn't get talked about. That's so interesting. I didn't know that was the kind of background. That's cool. Great. So that's a little bit about the theme of the song. I was reading up on your website, some of your collaborators or the people you worked with. Can you tell us a bit about the process of creating it?
Yeah. So, I mean, the recording process happened during COVID. So, or it's still COVID, but during the lockdown portion. So it was all very intense and very secluded and very one-on-one. And I was working really closely with the producers. But it was my first time in like recording in a recording studio. So it was super interesting. And actually all of this has been my first time. It's been like my first time in a recording studio, my first time on the radio, and my first time, you know, making a video and all these things. So I was really trying to enjoy it at the same time knowing we have to do it now, because I was recording like 3 hours away and getting COVID tests and all this. So it was like, okay, we need to really get it right. And so that was kind of, I knew I couldn't just, you know, drive down the street and re-record everything. So it was pretty intense for me, at least, you know, making sure everything sounded good and making sure everything else could be done remotely. But that was kind of the recording process. And although I love the recording process, it's like it's not my favorite thing, because my favorite thing is writing. And so it was more of a, although I enjoyed it a lot, it was more of a like, okay, what's next? Like, now it's done. Can we get it out? Can we, like, that was more where my brain was at.
Right. Yeah. Especially in a COVID time, I'm sure it's just like, let's get it done. Yeah. Awesome. I want to talk about the video, but before we get more into kind of the creation sides of things, I was reading that a little bit about kind of your journey as an artist, and I read somewhere, I think it was also on the site, that you weren't allowed to listen to pop music when you were younger. Can you tell, is that true? Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you go from listening mainly to kind of blues and rock to being a Swiftie?
Well, it is true. Yes, I was waiting for you to bring up Taylor Swift. It is really true. My dad did not let us listen to Virgin Radio. Like, he would just, I always wanted to listen to Virgin Radio. And he was always like, no, Virgin, like, it was a fight. So we didn't. We listened to, he was a musician. So his friend's CDs and his CDs and like the Rolling Stones and, you know, a lot of blues and Elvis and things like that. And I loved that. There's like videos of me just like watching Elvis, like staring at the computer, because I just love him. But I was really lucky to grow up with the internet. So I was like obsessed with Taylor Swift and not really like not surrounded by people who were obsessed with her, but I was so obsessed with her. And I was so obsessed with country music and because of her. And I just like female, like I was obsessed with Carrie Underwood. I was obsessed with like Miranda Lambert. Like, she really opened that door for me. And it was just like all these songs about like killing your husband. And I just loved it. Like, I really loved it all. So some of my first songs were about like leaving an abusive husband, even though I was like 10 in the bath, because I was just like, that's what I knew. But yeah, that is really true. And I really, but I just loved pop music, and I just loved like ear candy, and I just loved what was on the radio. And I think I felt kind of embarrassed about that for a bit, because especially early teen years, everybody wants to know like the cool underground whatever.
Yeah.
And I was never the friend with the aux, because I was always like, I only want to listen to like really basic things. But like, I have a playlist called Basic for a Reason. Like, I truly believe a lot of things are just basic because they're good. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the music I want to make, is just like things that a lot of people can listen to. But like, even I think I've succeeded with this song, because I've had my grandmother from like kids I used to babysit be like, I love it. And that's really my favorite thing, is just being it, like people can put it on and like it. At the same time, it has a meaning if you listen to the lyrics.
Yeah.
So I think I've succeeded in that, which I'm really proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it makes me think Taylor Swift and even the genre of country is really good at storytelling and lyrics and that kind of like immediate imagery. And I think you've definitely, you know, achieved that in this debut song. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the video, because there's also so much imagery in that. Can you tell us a bit about the, the inspiration for it, or the concept?
Well, so the video is really my baby. Like, I conceptualized it and I saw it through start to finish. And so that's probably like, I'm just as proud of it as the song, because I loved making it. It was my first time doing anything like that, but I was like, I just loved it. And I'm happy I like that, because it's not really music. It's just more like another form of art, but it was really fun. So basically, I think when you hear the song, your initial instinct for a video is it's in high school, because that's kind of where it takes place. But I wanted to kind of subvert that theme and do a bunch of high school scenes, typical scenes. So lockers and cafeteria and like prom and school photos, and just kind of see if we could make those work in a daycare to poke fun at the immaturity of this subject of the song. And so that's why there's the scene of me like singing to a camera in a crib for that POV, and that was probably my favorite scene. But that was the concept for the video. And then I got involved with Jared Levy, who directed it, and he was working with an awesome producer, Joshua Rosenbaum, and they came in and really like were able to help. They had the cameras and they had the vision too. And so it was really nice working with them. And I just asked all my friends to be in it. I was like, you're who was there, let's do this. And then I studied theater in Cégep. So I had a friend from theater join me, Josh Hughes. And he played the dude. And it just really came together really nicely. I felt really lucky, because I just happened to know all these talented people who could help me. So that was really fun.
That's awesome. And so, yeah, I was wondering, because, you know, sometimes it's an interesting comment that you made, where, you know, music is one kind of medium and then a video is a different thing. And I think you can tell, you know, you have a theater background, because sometimes it doesn't always translate with, you know, musicians onto the screen. And that's really cool to see, and that you got to work with your friends. So this video and song recently launched. What has the reception been so far? Are you happy with how everything has turned out? What's the feedback you're getting?
I'm really happy. I mean, it's for a first thing, like, to already be, you know, being picked up by the radio is really cool. Like, I'm so proud of that, because obviously as I was saying, like, being on pop radio or whatever is not something that... Or sorry, let me say that again. Being on pop radio is something that is really a dream of mine. So that's kind of my goal, is to be on Virgin Radio. But it's been really fun. And my favorite thing has been being like reached out to by actually young girls who go to my high school, who were like much younger than me when I left, and them being like, I love this song. And I'm just like, I made it for you. Thank you. Like, that's my, like, I can't believe they could be having their headphones in and like walking down the hallway and listening to my song, because that's really where I wrote it. Like, my high school was not the best for feeling empowered as a girl. You know, we had to wear skirts, and it was also just, I'm trying to think how to explain it. It was really focused on academics. And I think that's an inherently kind of male dominated field. So when you're spending all your time talking about that and wearing your skirt and all the guys are in pants, it just kind of makes you feel bad, like, even if you don't realize it. And so I'm just so happy that they get to hear those songs, because like, that's where I wrote them. The cover is like, the girl who did the cover, her name's Jen Lynn. She's awesome. She went to my high school too. And we were like, this is the third floor. No, this is the, sorry. We were like, this is the second floor West Wing. That's what it is. And so that was really fun, because now that people there are listening to it, I'm like, yeah, it's literally for you. I made it for you. I'm so happy you love it. So that's been like my favorite thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's so meaningful too, and it has that more personal connection. So I guess we'll, I want to make sure my internet, there we go. So those were all my kind of main questions. I guess I want to know, so this is the first song that's out. You'll have your time to, you know, enjoy this, of course, but also what's next, and what do you hope to continue building and creating?
Well, right now I'm really trying to kind of get my foot in the door in being taken seriously. Like, I am a young woman, and so even though I'm like kind of running, I'm an independent artist, right? So I'm making the decisions, and I'm having a lot of fun. But, you know, still, when I walk into spaces, I'm usually one of the only girls. Like, even the video, it's dudes. Even recording, it's dudes. And that's okay, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I do feel like I definitely want to try to start working with more women. Now that I have a bit more of a repertoire, and I can kind of be like, these are the stories I want to tell. So for my next thing, I'm working on another single that I really want to put out. We're starting with singles. We're starting with, you know, kind of creating different little universes in these songs. And then my goal eventually is to make an album and work on a live show and do all those things. But so what was I saying? Yes, with this next single, I definitely want to try to work with more women, because I think I'm telling a female story, and it's important to have those people behind the scenes too. And I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited. Obviously, I'm enjoying this, but literally as soon as the song came out, I was like, okay, next song, we got to go. And that's kind of how my brain works. So I'm really looking forward to doing that and doing hopefully a different video and developing, like I said, a live show is going to be really cool. I'm really looking forward to that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. I really appreciate you bringing in the kind of gendered experience of being not just a female artist, but a young female artist. So that's a really important perspective to chat about. So really appreciate that.
Thank you. Being able to incorporate them in this is really important to me, because it's where most of my energy goes.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's something that's really important to me, and I hope I can keep talking about it, because I want young girls to see me talk about it. and listen and feel seen and all that.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to see what you do next.
You're listening to Dragon Root Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. You just heard our interview with Wynn Wolf, a Montreal artist who just made her debut with Boys on Magazines. Here is that song.
You're so cool, they call you by your last name. You're so cool, getting high fives in the hallways. Girls, they call you trouble.
Was Boys on Magazines by Wynn Wolf, debut song. Now we are going to shift gears and listen to an interview with the founder and creative director of Chizantik.
Hi, my name is Dina. I'm the founder and creative director of Chizantik. I'm also a multidisciplinary artist, and my work centers around cultural and societal intersectionalities. And my passion lies within the realm of visual arts with underlying social commentary. So I really focus on making safe communal spaces for marginalized identities and really encourage taking up that space.
Awesome. So can you tell us, as you mentioned, you're a founder. So can you tell us a little bit about how this project began? Maybe before in its current form.
Yeah, also, I just want to say, like, Chizantik, for me, I pronounce it Chizantik. I guess I'll just start with the name. Let's start with that. So when I was brainstorming for the store's name, I stumbled upon Chizantik, and I knew that it was the one instantly, but then I was hesitant because of the letter Kha. It just made, the word itself means your closet in Arabic. And my first thought was, how would non-Arabic speaking individuals pronounce it? And then I recognized that in that thought, I was compromising on my identity and culture, and I decided that it didn't matter. Everything in the past, everything I did was about being neutral and about just compromising on my identity to make everyone else comfortable. But everyone else, as in basically like non-Arabs, I always felt like Arabs were so loud and took up so much space. So I just like since moving to Canada, I've been like making myself smaller and smaller and smaller. So yeah, I just decided that it didn't matter. And that's the whole point. So even with the word Khizantik, I'm celebrating that letter Kha. And it just means that for those who are not familiar with this letter, they can just say however sounds right or however sounds natural. And there's really no wrong to say it, no wrong way to say it. But for me, it's Khizantik. Khizantik is a space for queer and BIPOC individuals to express themselves through experimental fashion, performance, and community. Khizantik is an ethical and inclusive fashion, culture, and identity-centered platform and store. And this will manifest in selling slow fashion or secondhand items. It will also manifest in events and pop-ups that center local artists and other BIPOC creatives in Montreal, and just overall represent and celebrate queer and BIPOC expression and individuality.
Awesome. I love that you mentioned that about the name. That's such a, that's great that you didn't compromise. So can you tell us a bit about how, so as you mentioned, it's a safe space for queer and BIPOC individuals. Can you tell us more about what this means for the initiative and why it was important to center?
Yeah, of course. So bi-enforced spaces are so important because they highlight and validate the lived experience of marginalized communities. And these spaces are also anti-colonial in their essence. It's just so important to highlight this and to provide spaces that are dedicated to the representation, celebration, and safety of queer BIPOC individuals. So connecting with fellow BIPOCs and just building a community where there's a common understanding and you don't even have to explain yourself or make your identity small and like, again, compromise on who you are just because you're surrounded with folks who relate to your experience. And that's just been really life-saving for me. Community and spaces that are specifically dedicated to queer BIPOCs have healing powers, and it just overall encourages taking up space and making that space for yourself that otherwise you wouldn't have been offered because of oppressive socio-political realities. So Khizantik really just says that you don't have to choose between appropriating or surrendering your non-white identity. And it just says that you can, I guess, redefine your identity in a way that serves yourself to celebrate rituals and traditions and yeah.
So you mentioned it, there's a focus on kind of slow fashion, fashion events. What's your, and experimental fashion. So what's your personal connection with experimental fashion and performance? And how did your experience inform this project?
Okay. So this might get a little bit deep, but so having a degree in women's studies and business studies is really what paved the way for this project to come to life. Business studies, I would say, taught me technical skills, traditional modes of business, and entrepreneurship, whereas women's studies sharpened my skills in critical thought and just equipped me with an intersectional understanding of the world. Experimental fashion for me has to do with how you approach a traditional concept of a clothing store and how you adapt it to your needs. So that being like your identity needs, your financial needs. For me, it's just first and foremost an accessible way to be an entrepreneur. So Khizantik is a raw project. It's a transparent space, but mostly a space that challenges colonial and patriarchal and capitalist notions. This means that it doesn't really matter what the structure is. It's flowy. It's a play it by ear type of project. And what I mean by that is that the idea of following a strict business plan and a strict structure when it comes to stores is very capitalist. So Khizantik shies away from that. It also alleviates some of the societal pressures of conforming to all these rules and business models and colonial ways of living. And it just encourages alternative ways of productivity and a more accessible way of entrepreneurship. It's experimental in every sense of the word. So it really centers creative processes that don't put too much pressure on structure, but more importantly, it's exciting and forgiving, fun and ever-changing. Also, I choose to use the word performance because I find that it highlights how in today's online world, everything is a performance. So it's a good and bad thing in a way. I feel like it takes away some of the pressure of presenting yourself and being vulnerable. It sort of just like represents a shield. We're constantly performing for others, but it doesn't have to be a bad thing. In this context, it just means that you can choose to present yourself exactly as you wish to be perceived. And there's so much power in that. And it allows space for drama, theatricals, and just like anything outside of a norm. And this was important for me to also center because of how rigid the Arab community can be and the lack of representation of Arabs in these spaces. So Arab community is very heavy on reputation and honoring reputation. So just having this kind of representation out there and like being in public and just as that you can let loose. It doesn't matter what anyone thinks, it's all just performance anyways. But yeah, it says you can be any version of yourself that you want to be and feel comfortable presenting that and being perceived as such without the pressure of defining it. It just says like it's not that deep. And just entrepreneurship in general for me, it took me such a long time to like start any business endeavors just because it just feels very intimidating and just it's not accessible to everyone, but it also doesn't have to be that bounded and that just that deep. It's just it just also encourages others to just do it. Like just do it, go with the flow. Don't set too many expectations for yourself because whatever comes out of it will come out. And it's just a matter of being consistent and believing in yourself.
A little earlier, you mentioned the importance of community in building this. So can you tell us a little bit about what the reception has been so far or the impact that it's had or that you hope for it to have?
Yeah. Before Khizantik was Khizantik, it was DDC. Which was just an online thrift store. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is because without DDC, Khizantik would have never come to light because DDC really taught me the meaning of community and how supportive and necessary community is. DDC was a super DIY in my closet, winging it type of situation. But it paid the bills, and it paid the bills because of the community who believed in me, trusted me, and just supported me. So far with Khizantik, I only just rebranded it and launched it, and I'm just really excited for what's to come. Like, it's just everything is falling into place, and it just makes so much sense. It's been received with so much love, support, and enthusiasm. And although the DDC community was very small and humble, every single item I would put out would sell within seconds. And again, all of this just happened because of the community. Like it was a following of around 500 people, but every single person there really contributed to it. And even with the pop-ups and the collaborations, like it just turned into a communal hub of trading and selling and buying clothes. So it's what had made DDC, but also community is what I'm trying to say is that community is what makes Khizantik what it's going to be. And yeah, I'm really thankful for that. And also the way DDC had started was people coming up to me and asking me if I could sell on their behalf or if they could use my platform. So it was just like word of mouth and connections and connecting with people and everyone just like selling together and showing up for each other. So yeah, community has definitely been life-changing for me.
I love to hear it. That's so great. You mentioned also earlier fashion, but also events coming up. So what are your hopes for the future? What kind of events do you plan on holding? All those things.
Yeah, I'm really trying to, I just want to connect with other creatives in Montreal and highlight other artists, queer and BIPOC individuals. And for events, it would really just be like BIPOC markets and DJs and artists, and just like coming together and highlighting each other. I'm working towards expanding the Chizantic team and towards having a self-sustaining clothing store that just gives back to the community. I'm also hoping to launch a magazine in 2022 that highlights Arab, queer, and BIPOC art. So merging the two would also be in the books. I'm just super excited for the future of Chizantic, and I'm really looking forward to collaborating with other fellow queer BIPOC creatives. And also cannot wait to launch the website. That's coming soon.
Oh, that's exciting. Cool. So speaking of the website to be launched, but where in the meantime, where can people learn more or find you online?
So for now, Chizantic is operating on Instagram, which is its main platform. So it's at Chizantic, spelled K-H-E-Z-A-N-T-I-K. You can also keep an eye out on the brand on what's coming next there, but the website will be launching soon. We also just launched the Chizantic TikTok for some fun video content. So it's the same handle at K-H-E-Z-A-N-T-I-K. Otherwise, you can find me and follow up on my work on Instagram at Dina Shihabi. So D-I-N-A-S-H-I-H-A-B-I. And for other content that's relevant on TikTok, at the Dina Shihabi. So T-H-E-D-I-N-A-S-H-I-H-A-B-I.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.